Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. This is season 2, episode 18, where we're talking about training that is truly effective. I'm joined, as always, by our host, Katarina Santos. How are you doing, Kate?
Hello, I'm all right. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. We had a great session today talking all about training, which is a topic that I know that we hold sort of near and dear to our hearts. How did you find the session?
Yeah, it's a very good session, isn't it? Talking about training. I think it's very relatable to everyone because regardless if it's data protection or not, I think the advice that we provide today is kind of across all the our trainers or people receiving train. But I think a kind of relevant topic that we discussed were the common pitfalls and as well as what actually a trainer should look like and actually the training session should be looking like and the most important things to take care of when we are delivering training.
Yeah, absolutely. We talked a little bit about what makes an effective trainer as well as you as an individual and you know, really how to bring that value to yourself and the broader team. I think it was a really good session. Let's not give too much away. We'll let you jump right into the session and we hope you enjoy.
Thank you very much. Happy week.
Friday, everybody.
Be
lovely sunny Friday, in fact. So I think you can tell that me and Kate are in quite high spirits, which is obviously lovely. We're back with
it's not normal.
it's true, actually. But welcome back to another episode of the Data Protection Made Easy podcast. Got another topical session today where we're going to be looking at training that actually changes behavior, which is great because I love talking about training. But just before we jump into the session, do a few little bits of housekeeping. Of course, guys, as you know, these sessions are recorded. I think one of our lovely folk behind the camera will be putting the privacy notice up. So if you want to exercise any rights in that vein, then feel free. And again, the same thing with the chat bots. If we see them, we will be removing them. Don't take it personally. Just community feedback, basically. And that's it. I want to keep it nice and brief so we can jump right into the session. So Kate, how has your week been?
It's been quite all right, actually. I just wanted to add about the Duo event.
Oh, of course.
Yes. So actually, we opened a couple of more tickets for you, especially as a community, because you are such a nice community and we do like you so much that we open a little bit room for a couple of more tickets. So if you are still interested on the event next Thursday in Manchester, 28th, about the Duo, please just send an email or go to the Eventbrite and make sure that you have yourself a ticket because we'll potentially have space for you and we'll be lovely to see you. But on that note, my week was really good. We had a lot of things to do during this week. I would say more in the management side of things, particularly on Wednesday when me and Kane went on the first aid training, which was quite nice. A little change of scenarios. And I'm quite enjoy that because I felt it was such a misconception, at least for myself. We learned so many things about like seizures, like massive bleeding, CRPs, etc. And I thought like there is such a misconception about things in general. Like I thought in a seizure I should have like a hand in the mouth, like to take care of like the tongue, etc.
Oh really?
I'm glad that I did not have to dealt with that in the past because probably that would not be good. But it's a good training to have, definitely.
So, you know, someone thought it was wise to put me and Kate responsible for saving lives, apparently. But no, it was... it was great. I really enjoyed it, actually.
So if there are any problems now, we are the first aiders on DPP. So, yeah.
Yeah, so no, it's really good stuff. And it's obviously good to make sure that we have these things. So really informative. And it's... Good to know all these things, isn't
Absolutely.
It? For everybody to know.
What are you?
A bit of the same. A lot of management stuff. I have been sort of deep in loads of different stuff, but on the very topical note, I've been doing loads of things in relation to training, and training's kind of become a big part of what I do, which is great, and it's even more ideal because I get to talk about training right now. So I've spent a lot of this week kind of having a look at some of the stuff that we do internally as well as externally as well. So some exciting stuff sort of on my end, and I'm looking forward to see how it it develops as we go forward.
Are we about to see some new developments in the future?
Maybe, yeah. Maybe you might see a little bit more of my face. Again, I'm sorry about that. Unfortunately, you've not got much more of a choice, but my face may be floating around even more than usual. But all in the respect of training, which is nice and fun.
I'm going to the addresses so regularly now.
Going to
just
what?
To get to the hairdresser so regularly now, just to keep yourself sharp.
I was like, what are you saying? Yeah, well, my hair was getting a bit. But do you want to jump into any of the news, Kate, before we talk about training?
Yes, I have actually a couple of things that I have seen. One of them being quite interesting is about Yasio and the fact that he has advised the UK government to consider some changes to the Regulation 6 of PECA to better support privacy-preserving online advertising models. So at the moment, no, like the PECA generally requires consent whenever organizations store access information on the user's devices for advertising purposes, regardless of the level of the privacy risks involved. However, the ICO gave some advice and actually issued a statement saying that they believe that one-size-fits-all approach may discourage the business from investing in the low-risk advertising methods and contribute to widespread consent fatigue caused by constant cookie banners. So they have proposed a risk-based approach where lower-risk advertisement activities could potentially operate without explicit consent, and then the more intrusive tracking and profiling activities that would still require consent. So they, like the SEO, and then final note, they have highlighted the importance of this risk-based approach and as well of the context. So like, where is the advertising coming from? And gave an examples of a less intrusive approach because adverts, for example, are based on the content of the user that is actually viewing at that current moment rather than tracking their behavior across websites over time, like all of the time. I think is actually quite interesting.
It is very interesting. First and foremost, I don't like how often sort of the ICO use the term explicit consent when they're not actually referencing explicit consent. They just mean consent. It's a bit of a weird thing to do, and it's a little bit misleading. Yeah. I know what they're trying to say, but it's misleading considering what you know, the condition in Article 9 and stuff.
Yeah.
It is really interesting. And I can see, I suppose, a potential argument for that kind of route. I can understand potentially a need for it. I do think there is a little bit of a daft by cookie banner sort of situation going at the moment. And to be able to be compliant with Regulation 6 of the PECA in relation to consent and your cookies is quite difficult without feeling super over-facing, to be honest with you. So I do feel like some kind of, realignment or potential, maybe not watering down is the best term, but kind of re-changing the stance on that a little bit, which is, seems to be that they're doing. They are changing some of the, under the do, there's some cookies now that obviously we don't have to use in the consent anymore. And, I appreciate that to an extent. I think we've got to take a risk-based approach with everything with data protection. So I think it makes sense to, the ICO is right, we can't just be blanketing everything. And I think we need to move away from that kind of stigma, I suppose. But Leah, I think, or Samantha, should I say? I think I can see that you've got your hand up. Do you want to jump in?
I'm so very sorry for interrupting you. I just pushed a button. It wasn't meant to happen.
Maybe not. Maybe shy up. Oh,
there you are.
Want to join us, Samantha?
Can you hear me?
Maybe it's technical issues. If you just want to jump
are you able
in
to hear me now?
If you do have a point.
But no, I completely agree with you. And I think as well, this does not change the law. Obviously, it's just the ICO obviously provide, like making their job and being a regulator and advising. But I think it's a quite good initiative. It's important to not for them actually to be involved, but as well to be able to show people that they actually have some involvement. And even in laws that are already in place and implemented, they actually have still a say, particularly this new reality and things that are going on. I remember actually myself and Jasmine and a chance to watch this documentary a couple of months ago called Social Media Dilemma, and that's available on Netflix. It's really good. But like, long story short, they kind of gave the idea about how all this behavior, all these cookies, all this information is constant feeding these massive organizations and all these social media platforms and then Googles and Metas, et cetera. And I worked in the field for, data protection for a couple of years now. And I used to thought, okay, I know my stuff a little bit at least, but I was not aware of how invisible these things can be, how you are not aware, even practitioners that are dealing with this information that we are advised, obviously, to read the privacy notice and the cookie banners and reject all and et cetera, and how the invisible process that can exist on these things based on our behavior, based on our preferences. We always think, oh, actually, how do they know this? It's always a question, how do they know this? And it's always about the cookies that we eventually accepted in the past or everything they are tracking in a visible way. But yeah, just to make a point, it's a very good documentary, actually.
Yeah, I suppose like before you sort of entered the world of data protection and privacy, everyone's always kind of like, oh, how does my phone know so much about me and this and that? And, you know,
listening to me, isn't that like, they're listening.
Well, maybe potentially they are to an extent, you know. I also think there is potentially a little bit of an education piece that would be more beneficial for the broader public in terms of understanding how cookies work. I mean, cookie banners attempt to do that, but again, you know, you got to understand that 9 times out of 10, most people aren't really paying much care or information, like any kind of readings. You know, they try to reject it as quick as they can, they try to accept it as quick as they can.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's... Well, apologies, Samantha. If you do want to jump in at any other point, then definitely
please do.
Please feel free to do so. But I kind of agree with what the ISO is saying to an extent. But
I think it's a good initiative.
And I think some changes or tweaks to the PECA, could be a good thing. I think the ISO have also been making some other moves in relation to the PECA in terms of some fines.
Mm-hmm.
That's the. It's the nice, easy one, isn't it? It's the nice straight shooter. I think it was a 160,000 fine in relation to some unsolicited direct marketing this time to individuals who are on the TPS.
Mm-hmm.
So just kind of a reiteration that, you know, the ICO is still obviously so clearly monitoring and going after companies that are acting in that regard with marketing, because it is something that is still probably happening at large.
Absolutely.
So it's probably something that they're still going to continue to jump on with these fines that they seem to be kind of ballparking figures, don't they? I don't really know where they get these figures from. There must be some kind of maths behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But they're always a little bit different, aren't they?
It's just
sometimes so it's low, sometimes it's 20 grand, sometimes it's 160. So, but it's good to see that we the ICO are continuing to use their enforcement for stronger action. I think they need to take stronger action like that, especially to companies who are kind of berating people with these kind of calls and stuff. I think it makes perfect sense.
I have just one more, obviously a very important subject, well, to myself personally, but as well, like, based on very recent news and the constant news about the deep fakes and images, sexual images made available in social medias like Reddit and OpenAI, etc. So in this case, actually, it's about Ofcom, not still on the regulator side, but Ofcom side now, that Ofcom has announced that it's strengthening its illegal content code to include the recommendation that all tech companies implement automated detection technology to curb the spread of non-consensual sexual images, including explicit deepfakes. So this is a recommendation, of course, I will then share with you for the ones that are interested on kind of these thematics and just to have a look. But basically, the recommendation is more or less requiring all the websites and any apps, applications and scopes to expand the use of hash matching software to protect everyone, but obviously more into women and girls online and teenagers, etc. So they are implementing these kind of proactive measures that, to be honest, is way later
Yeah.
And it should be, because normally the Ofcom reacts to something, never makes a proactive measure. So it's good to see that apparently they are open their eyes and to the recent news and the new developments, and they are making these type of recommendations. So this is goes alongside with new legislation on banning nudification tools, and as well as, and I quote, mandating a 48-hour takedown window for unconsented explicit material that will definitely significantly diminish online abuse. So this is pending currently parliamentary approval. Again, just recommendations, but I think I've seen the statement and the report as well. It's quite interesting, very long, but very interesting. And I'll share the link with you for you to be able to see.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe a little bit too retrospective for this kind of stuff, but something needs to be done, and it needs to be done fairly pronto. So it's nice to see that something is made in relation to that.
It's scary, isn't it?
It's quite an upsetting thing, isn't it? I think
it's really scary. Just thinking about, like, I don't know, just bearing in mind, like, the fact that today everyone's is available online. Even, like, for example, me and you, because we are representing the protection people, we, if you go to Google, our face is in there. So we can actually just, I don't know, if someone just can upload our photo and make something around it. Obviously, we're not the...
Yeah, I really doubt we're the target audience, but you know, I think particularly, you know, if you are, especially a female in the public eye at the moment, I imagine it's probably, quite a daunting and unnerving space at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Which would be really, really unfortunate, but you know, hopefully, it is something that's going to be actioned quite quickly and with a little bit of a strong hand. I think that's needed, but. I am quite wary of time, so I want to make sure that we give enough sort of love to the topic at hand. So obviously, of course, we want to talk about training and awareness. I think I'll start more with a little bit of a question, I guess, and see where we go from there.
Mm-hmm.
Kate, what do you think makes good training? Very loaded statement or very loaded question, but what do you think makes good training?
I think the training is a very dear topic for us because there is no direct in the UK data protection law. Well, in UK GDPR, there is no direct law just about and directed to training, but training is mentioned across the law as a whole. We have in the accountability purpose, we have the obligations on the controller, we have in the responsibilities of the DPO Article 39, we have in the obviously in the privacy by design by default, so training is part of everything, and it's exactly that. I think training is relevant. Training is something that is clear, is understandable, is customized in the sense that it's not a one size fits all. We need to understand, appreciate that training is something that will depend on what you do and what is actually your approach. In this case, obviously, to data protection in general, in actually what is your touch with it. And it's something that is very important to be understood on the other side and to be tested in a sense, not with, obviously, how do you measure that and how to do that, quizzes and questions, but tested in a way in your daily basis, you do understand that training is actually being in place and you understand what you're doing. It's just not a theory, because I can be very good with my memory. I can be very good with my eyes, and I have good memory to know exactly the answers I should give.
Mm.
But then actually in my daily basis, probably I don't know what to do. So that needs to be practical, needs to be things that's practical and achievable for everyone.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I've been spending a lot of time recently thinking about not what just makes good training, but what makes a good trainer. I know I mentioned last week that I was on some sort of training courses and stuff. And I think what I've understood is training is only really as good as the person who is delivering it, you know. And I think maybe that goes without saying to an extent, but I think it's very easy to... you know, try and stick to the very sort of basic materials that you have, you know, operating off of things like PowerPoint and working with people, you know, online and refreshers and you know, there's a lot of e-learning and stuff that people operate off of. But I think there's a real desire and a need, and I do think that e-learning is great. I must say that first, but then there's a real need for some kind of human connection with training. Training isn't something that is built for the masses to be a good trainer. You need to be able to maybe work in all kind of manners and means and ways, and with different people in kind of manners and means and ways. You know,
absolutely. I think,
all individuals learn differently. Right? I think we've done. What I understand, at least, I'm not a scientist, but there are people that have left-sided thinking and right-sided thinking in respect of the brain, and that means that they learn very differently. And of course, this means that they may have very different skills, or they may understand information in a different kind of capacity. Which means, you know, when we're looking at things like the GDPR, it can never be as simple as this is what the law says, this is what it means for your role, because that will work for some people, absolutely. And it may work for the majority of people. However, there may be people that just do not work and think in that line of thinking. You know, to be a trainer is to be an educator. You know, you're a teacher in that respect, and mm-hmm. and you've got to think, you know, to all your times back in school and what made the best teachers. And it was always the people who could make stuff understandable to anybody. And I always think back to that, and I think what kind of made me learn and grow. The best, but it's not always about what helps me grow. It's about what's going to help everybody grow. And I always think a really good way in ensuring that is having variable training. Even if you do operate largely off of e-learning, I think that's fantastic. But mm-hmm. I do, well, as long as the e-learning is good, of course, but I think there has to be a good balance of in-person training, more specific tailored training to specific teams, to specific individuals, sorry, I can't speak today, as well as more actionable sort of practical work. I think, you know, you should really encourage people to be getting out there and working with people and collaborating on stuff. You know, the best training is when you can get people talking and you can get them thinking about it afterwards. You know, me and Kurt walked away from this first day training last week and we're thinking, mm-hmm. well, you know, what do we need to do, or what can we be doing to make sure that we're looking after staff as best we can? And I think you want to make training in mind of that. You want to write and create training with an objective for them to have something and they can take it away and they go, I know exactly what I've learned today. I know exactly what it is that I have understood from this training today. And I think that's a big thing about training, is understanding, one, what it is that we want them to take away, and actually portraying that to them as well. You know, this is actually what I'm trying to take, this is what I want you to take away. You know, I want you to take this away with knowledge on how to redact a SAF, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So they know what's expected of them. And if they don't, they can then communicate that with you, because they may not know at the end of the day what you actually want from them.
Yeah.
But if the expectations are clear, then you can work with them more directly if you need to. And they also have a kind of feeling of completeness if they do get to that sort of end point as well.
I completely agree. I think every single time I deliver training in terms of to clients, and depending obviously on the topics, but we always tend to do like an induction training, because there are several types of training. We have induction trainings, we have refreshing trainings. It's true that they have different type of thematics and the way you should approach, because one is obviously the introduction to it and the refreshing of them. But anyway, when it's topic wise, and even when they are introduction in generic speaking, I always try to be as practical as possible, because I remember in school, and I'm sure that you will share these thoughts with me, in school, high school, university, I was always listening to my professors and the way they were teaching me. And it's true that I came with law background, so obviously everything would be around the law. But the ones that I actually remember and actually how to do things is the ones that got me in the way they talked with me, the way they approached the training session with me, was not reading the presentation, was not being a completely monotone, like boring monotone individual on the other side, but actually the ones that were engaging with us, asking questions and make it practical. For me, I think that's the difference in as well, because, for example, picking up the example that you gave about the subject access request, for me, in my training sessions with around SARS, I can't leave a SAR training without having people to actually redact something for me, for example, or applying some exemptions, or doing some actually a SAR, let's talk about it and let's analyze it together. Because how can you deliver? And that's it came up a couple of times actually when people were doing them and trying to understand like the outcomes of it, because I understand that there are loads of people that we learn, as you're mentioning, in the other terms, they have good memory, or actually they have image, and they understand and know exactly what to do, and they just, well, keep their in their memory. But there is nothing else as doing in practical, because even if you do, know the theory, do you actually need an example of real life that actually can happen to you to know how to do it? Do you know actually what you're thinking? Because what the aim here is not for you to be able to discuss it, to argue, but actually for you to do it. That's the main goal, is actually to do it in a compliance way. And that obviously you achieved with our purpose. That's the main goal of a training.
Definitely. I think, you know, considering we're all practitioners, I think we will all understand to an extent that the theory of stuff is only so important. In fact, it's, you know, it's important to the end goal, but what the real kicker is mm-hmm. the practicality of things. You know, the law is obviously very straightforward. The ICO are very theoretical, but the weight comes in the practicality of how we do stuff and being able to talk to people who have practical experience in stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I would much rather speak to a bricklayer with 30 years experience on site than somebody who just teaches in it and has never laid a brick before in their life. You know, sometimes you've got to speak to the people who, well, exactly, Charlotte, exactly on my point, just because, you know, the theory of driving a car doesn't mean that you can drive. And practicality is such a huge bit about it. So especially when we're understanding of teaching and educating people who may not care about data protection, mm-hmm. they may not care about it too much. They also may not probably know very little about it.
Extends.
Yeah, exactly. And they don't know where to begin. It's very daunting when you're in that world. It can't just be theoretical, because they're not. It's really, really difficult for them to seep that in. We've got to make sure that there is some practicality in it.
Yeah.
And practicality comes in many forms. Again, I think, you know, these quizzes can be good and there's value from them. But I think you've got to get people interacting. You've got to get them speaking. You've got to get them thinking about what works for their business. You know,
you've
got to make it relevant to that. You know, something that I always like to do where I can, it's kind of difficult in the realms of how we do it. But what I find works really well, and maybe something is that you see in school, is if you had maybe a couple different scenarios or areas that you wanted people to look at, say, hopefully you could be in person, but if you can't, have little breakout rooms, have people look at these little four sections, bring them together and let them be the educators. Obviously, I'd come in and make sure everything's all tidied up in that regard and everyone's taken away what they need to. Mm-hmm. But to force them to seep in this information is also to help them be able to talk about it. If they can talk about it confidently and if they can discuss between themselves and collectively, you know, they're kind of doing the work for you almost, and they're going to learn much more in that regard when they're all coming together and they're saying, oh, but we do this in our team and we actually seen this instead of, you know, you're saying this, but maybe it conflicts with that, or maybe we could do this a little bit better on our side. And that's where you kind of hit the sweet spot, is where you can get people not excited, because, you know, maybe there's only so excited you can get with data protection.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where we come in. We have to bring the energy and the passion around training, because if we turn up and we are, hello guys, we're going to talk about data protection today. I know you don't really want to talk about data protection today, but that's what I'm going to do. We're going to run through X, Y, and Z. We're going to talk about the law.
Yeah, many people actually are like that.
Yeah,
you know, and they have this for a job for ages.
And sometimes that's, yeah, I've been a trainer for 30 years. But that's not what we want as a DPO, as a practitioner, as a consultant. Yeah. You have to bring energy and you have to bring excitement to the topic to make it feel relevant, to make them care about it. You have to have a real good energy about you. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be, you know, super like super bubbly, super optimistic, super smiley. Maybe that's not you. Maybe you're more like me. Maybe you're a bit more miserable, but you have to bring passion and care about why you do what you do and why it's important as well. And if you can make them care, even just a little bit, then they're going to really seep in a lot more.
Yeah. I think as well, like in the training, you always have this misconception that the training is boring. Training, oh my God, we are having training today. I really can't. I really don't want to do it. Or is seen as a waste of time? Is it seen as something else? Is a ticket box? More one like in the checklist that we have, like, oh, we had this training today. Something around those lines. And I think, to be honest, obviously it's the individual's perspective and the way they feel that way. And obviously it's on the trainer side of things to try a little bit to change that, but as well as it's a cultural thing within your own organization. It should be something that comes from the top saying, okay, this is a training session. This is be exciting. Try to be involve them with some awareness campaign, show them the agenda, the topics, tell them to potentially prepare some questions in advance, actually to be able for them to be ready, to be challenged, to be able to expose themselves in some sort of normal situations. And exactly what it goes along the line of the name of the episode today is, for me, what the training that actually changes like mindsets are the ones that actually change the behavior, and it's just not just the records. Because, and going along with the cultural thing of the organizations, is how you measure the training. How do you do that? You do it by who attended the session, how many did attend the session, who clicked the complete like or clicked slides or completed training. This is that. You measure by passing or fail the quiz is how you do it. And you don't do actually, and go a little back on what I was saying, is in being the practicality of the daily basis thing is you don't, I can do the training today and actually pass the test and I pass the quiz. However, every month I am sending emails to the wrong recipients. I don't think that's even a data breach for me. I don't even acknowledge that because it is what it is. And I'm constant doing that. Mm. But on the measuring of the training side of things, actually, I'm a superstar. I've passed it. I've done it on a regular basis. You know, so actually, like, the measure of is two perspectives that we need to always to bearing in mind here is in a, well, three. On the trainer side, we have the organization side and we have the people that are being trained. The people that are being trained are the ones that actually just breathing all the knowledge and all the education things you are giving them to them based on the materials, based on things they are exposing yourself, etc. The trainer side is actually obviously the individual are transmitting that educational material and that you are exposing them to this reality. But as well, like, we cannot forget ever that the organization as a whole, bearing in mind that the trainer, I'm thinking about an outsource or just an individual per se, but the organization as a whole is a very, very important party in the equation, because the training is not just a one-time thing when you come in the organization and then you potentially have a refresher every year. You should be expecting to have awareness campaigns, posters, sending emails, like, remember this, newsletters in a constant way. You are expected to do all of this. So it's not just one-time thing, I would say. So it's pretty kind of a triangle.
It's ongoing development, isn't it? And you know, sometimes as a DPO, I appreciate you don't have the time to be consistently educating and training, which are why I think it's really important, as Kate mentioned, about that culture and get that buy-in from, you know, senior leaders, your data guardians and champions, heads of services. Mm-hmm. If you can get the buy-in from them, it will always trickle down. You know, you can have really quite a difficult task if you struggle to get buy-in from, you know, heads of services and stuff around what you're trying to talk about. So it can be a bit of a task if you don't have that kind of relationship, but I'd encourage you to try go out there and build that if you can, and try work directly with them. You know, I think the way that we need to train and educate heads of services is going to be, you know, really different. Mm-hmm. It's got to be different. You know, I'm very much a fan of the fact that training can't be one size catches all. It will never work. You know, you've got to know who you're talking to. You've got to meet with different groups of people. You know, I don't think if I was to train internally here at DPP, I don't think I'd sit down with the marketing team and tell them loads about what we do in support, because it's not super valuable to them. You know, what they need to know is what's going to relate to their role, and that's going to change from person to person. So if I just sit in a big area and I talk to you about data protection, you know, there might be a few people that are seeping in the relevant bits to them. But if we can try and meet with smaller groups, maybe less time, you know, don't dedicate 6 hours to training necessarily. If you can dedicate a little time with smaller groups to work with them to the stuff that matters, that's going to be the value. I think they ran studies, didn't they? And they found that in terms of training and mm-hmm. stuff like this, like the podcast,
yeah,
is people try to seep that information in when the sessions are a lot smaller, and it gives them, you know, a little bit more to retain. And I think there's a value in that, you know, refresher training when they're spending, you know, half the day going through it. They might end up resenting it by the end, and we don't want that. We want them to be able to take something away for a portion of their day and then kind of crack back on, but give them enough where they're thinking about it enough. And, you know, maybe that's a really hard ask, because we appreciate how busy you all are, and I understand how that is, how e-learning has found its sort of curve in the market, and that's why it's so valuable. And I think it is so valuable, but I think it also does have to come in with that human touch and that expertise and that caring. That caring is really I think that's the hook there. That's the big thing, is you've got to care, really, haven't you?
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think and that's why, and to be honest, I'm sure about you, but from my experience, for me sometimes it's hard to make a balance between make sure that I'm saying everything that I need to say, having space for questions and answers, and obviously all this engagement within a very short period of time. And it's very hard to always make that balance. I think that's normally now that when you have that data protection officer or someone that is dealing with data protection and currently alongside with your organization, is very important to you align where you actually trained with your awareness campaigns, because you are training, and then, as I mentioned, there will be situations potentially that actually in the measurement size of things, like the people that attended training, they are superstars, but they are making mistakes. So that's where the awareness is so important, because it's not just posters. It's completely relevant. If you have a poster in your walls, but actually people have no absolute idea what the poster means,
sure,
or actually like what actually is written down there. For me, awareness is way more than that. Obviously the posters, it obviously helps materially speaking, but as well talking about having operational meetings. When you have, for example, we have internally every Monday, we do have a delivery meeting all together. Obviously, well, making the assumption that everyone knows what we're talking about here, but we do talk about this. We do talk about very specific complex cases and share our opinions and ask for help if needed. And doing that, obviously applicable, bearing in mind your nature as an organization, but as well, doing that in a regular basis, weekly, monthly, making everyone part of those discussions, obviously in a management perspective, and the people, making these conversations easy, making these conversations there and making these conversations exist, because this will be as well your awareness. This will be something like, for example, again, other case, you know what, Katerina, I unfortunately noticed that I've sent two emails for these individuals. I thought they actually, because they are very trusted third parties to us, they're actually our contractors, there was no problem in that. But I've seen that poster and I think it's something wrong. Is it something wrong? Shall I do that? Or actually creating first, you noticed that happened because you are their manager, for example, or they mentioned to you. Instead of pointing fingers, instead of making that case as a where you do this, try to create like a generic awareness or just a notice. Well, you know that the breaches is not just what we've seen in films, it's actually something very small as this and that. This can create risk, something along those lines. And I think that could be very helpful as well. And to be honest, on this note, I would just on your mind actually, question for you. For you, what are actually the common pitfalls? I would say for me, I have two big ones. That is very overly legalistic. We are always talking about law. And this is what the article says. This is it, with a monotone and just no practicality of things. And in the end of the end, my second one would be assuming that the most experienced staff already know. So we are not making them involved in these training sessions. We are making them involved in these awareness sessions because they are very experienced staff. They are here for 20 years. And why shall I involve them?
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it, when you think about it? But it can be hard to do, and, you know, practically, when you think about, you know, how do I remove this from the law when the law is such an important thing? And, you know, it's definitely a difficult ask. So, it, you know, mm-hmm. if that is the way that the training is looking at the moment, then, you know, don't feel, you know, you're concerned in that regard. I think what I will say, maybe not a pitfall, but potentially could be, is I think maybe sometimes individuals have to understand the difference between supporting and coaching. Training and coaching are two different things. And I think it's good to understand that. And there's kind of a matrix that I've been looking at recently that kind of explains the difference in the kind of process of someone as you begin to educate them. And you kind of start with, initially it is quite heavy on educating and not as much active support. So it's a lot of telling and then kind of just, you know, being there. And then it works into less educating, more supporting, spending a lot of time actively working with them. And then by the end, it should be a nice little mix of the two. And I think the key is understanding where you are trying to coach and where you are trying to train. I think those things are different. You know, teaching someone a process is more like coaching because you're working for and you're building them and you're supporting as in you're actively doing,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to where you're looking at educating, where it's much more high level, it's much more general. And it's more about giving them the information. There's got to be an element where you let people take things into their own hands and you let them develop from that period. And I think that's really important, is giving them that time to develop
to actually do
with mm-hmm. your support. And I think that's the key, is you educate, they can develop, and you provide that support. You can be that person they can go to. Maybe it's not you. Maybe it's a line manager who has also got more experienced in the higher level of data protection knowledge and understanding, who they can then fall back to the support. But you've got to understand where your line ends
mm-hmm.
and where somebody else has to then pick up on that coaching. Again, if you're just there to educate, then great, make sure that you can educate, but you're also going to make sure that there's someone coming in at some point who can do the support. And whether it's you, whether it's someone else, it's got to, it can't end there. It can't end with the training. There's got to be a kind of, you know,
a life cycle.
It's kind of like a grid. It's kind of hard for me to explain, but around the top end of it, after you've done that, there has to be that period where there is support, active hands-on support that has to happen. And then it should tail back round and we keep doing that circle, hopefully. But that's what I would say. Understand when your bit cuts out from training and understand when then the support needs to kick in. Effectively, that's kind of what I would say. I hope that made sense.
Yeah, it did make sense. I like that. And to be honest, I don't want to mess up with it. So I will leave the session like that with this very awful note from Kay. Do you agree? Yeah? Do you have anything else to say?
No, I think I've pretty much portrayed it. Yeah, I'd like to.
I really like the sessions, to be honest, out of training.
I guess the final thing I will say, and again, apologies. But if you are struggling with anything training wise, or if you do need any further support, then of course we do offer outsourced training at Data Protection People. We do have a couple of masterclasses running right now, which I think Miles has just dropped in. So if you do feel like you yourself need further training on stuff, or maybe some of your broader teams may benefit from that, you know, one, if you have a consultant here, maybe give them an ask. If you are one of our existing customers, feel free to reach out to me and Kate. We'd be happy to have that discussion with you, maybe see how we can support you. Or if you just want to pick our ear about some of the training that you got running, you'd like a little bit of help, just reach out. We are always here to try our best to help and support the community. But on that note, you know, shameless plug over, we hope you have a lovely bank holiday weekend. Charlotte, I guess we will see you in 2 weeks.
So nice. Louds.
But we'll be back again next week for the Doer event and for our next podcast. So we hope to see you there.
Thank you very much. Have a good weekend. Bye.
I guess.
Bye-bye.